This is a podcast of the Political Ecology Forum at Norwegian University of Life Sciences. Visit politicalecology.space. Welcome, everyone. Welcome to the second episode of this series of interviews with the academics that are part of the Political Ecology Forum at NMBU. Today we have as our guest Teshome Hunduma Mulesa. He is a PhD candidate at Nora Greek. And we are going to be talking about an article that was published this year in February in the journal Agronomy. The article is Pluralistic Seed System Development, A Path to Seed Security. And this article, Teshome is the lead author, but he also has, it's a collaboration with other researchers, Sara Paule Dale or Dale, Clifton Makate, Ruth Haug, and Ola Vestingen. So, Teshome, thanks for joining this conversation. We are pleased to have you here today.
Thank you. No, thank you for inviting me.
So, can you maybe we can begin talking a bit about what's the purpose of this article?
You can say it has twofold objectives. This one, this article or this research. The first one is the developmental objective. It aims to generate empirical evidence and influence policy, legislation, and actions for inclusive and equitable seed system development that increases farmer seed security. Academically, I would say it was intended to analyze farmer seed demand, that is farmers' seed use and preferences based on their agroecological, socio-cultural, and economic needs, and also to look at the role of supply-side institutions and actors. So by doing this, it aims to understand how different elements of seed systems affect farmer seed security, which includes varietal preference, seed quality, availability, and access to seed from different sources. That was the objective.
For the audience, for them to know a bit more about the article, the context is Ethiopia.
Yes. Yes. Ethiopia is a case country.
Okay. Yeah, we'll go back to a bit of the contextual elements. But can you also say a bit about why is it relevant? Why is this article and this topic of seed security is relevant in contemporary discussions around food systems?
That is an interesting question. I'm actually a little proud of our research on seed systems and seed security at the Department of International Environment and Development Studies, Nora Greek, at this university, Norwegian University of Life Science. This is because seed security for smallholder farmers in the global south was proposed as a game changer by the Norwegian government at the UN Food System Summit last month in September. I would like to quote actually a speech by the Prime Minister of Norway, Erna Solberg, at UN General Assembly in New York on 23rd September 2021. In quote, she said, "We will empower the smallholder farmer in our development assistance. We will place farmers at the center of the seed system. Seed security is key. We will take active part in Zero Hunger Coalition," she said. And Norway also followed up this proposal of seed security at the UN Food Summit with action, actually. It was very interesting to see that they decided to pledge $500 million Norwegian kroner to strengthen the seed sector in the global south. I can send you a link to a press release by the government of Norway and the speech by the Prime Minister, Erna, which you can share along with this podcast if you want to. So sure. To answer your question about the relevance of seed security in contemporary discussion around food system, maybe it is important to look at food system itself. So generally speaking, food system is all about the production and the consumption of food in a population. So this allows the connection between food production, hunger, sustainability issues, health, nutrition, and so on. Seed security is the basis for all of these elements of seed system, food system. If you look at the FAO definition of seed security, which was from 1998, but updated recently in 2015, the key parameters, which we also used in this article, in this research, are, for example, varietal suitability. It is all about the agronomic and quality traits that meet farmers' specific needs and preferences. So this is directly relevant for the point that I mentioned in the food system. It also includes, you know, varietal suitability also include about yield, storability, marketability, tolerance to environmental stress, pests, diseases, and other things that farmers prefer. These all are part of the food system discussion as well. So it is important in that regard. The other key features of seed security is seed availability. Farmers should have adequate seed, and this is a seed they can source from different sources. And they need to get seed at the right time to meet their needs from available sources. So the fact that timely available seed is there for them means that they can adjust their planting time according to the weather, which, you know, it's sometimes a delay of 1 week, for example, because of lack of seed, can incur a lot of production loss, which also implies less food for your family, as a poor farmer, for example. Access is another issue when it comes to seed security. This is farmers' ability to acquire seed. That can be through purchase, exchange, or loan, or social network. If you don't have all of these, then access becomes difficult. Even extension services and seed delivery channels, like transportation distance from the seed source, can be very challenging in terms of seed access. So they also need sufficient information and awareness about how and where to get preferred seed and information on prices, for example. These all are very important for farmers. So access is another thing, again, when it comes to equitable seed access and also food production and self-sufficiency. And quality is another parameter when you use the seed security framework. It is all about physical, genetic, and physiological properties of seed, which are very important for growing a robust plant that can give you a good health. So I will come to this later, but if you look at the farmer seed system, formal seed system, which we often talk about, they have their own limitations and strengths in all of these parameters, like quality, for example. And the resilience is another thing. So disasters happen whenever, wherever. And the ability of a seed system that can resist or withstand and adapt and recover from shocks and stresses, which treating the integrity of the household security is another important factor. So the fact that you have system, you have a coordinated action of actors to revive farmer seed system farmers use, is very key here. So the key parameters can only be attained if we have a well-functioning seed system, because seed security is a result of seed system functions. So this research looked at farmer seed situation in two districts in Central Highlands of Ethiopia. It explored the role of seed system actors operating in both districts and linked the findings on the ground, the seed security situation, to Ethiopia's seed system development policy, which they call it pluralistic seed system development strategy, which was released in 2013. They started a pilot project and then approved in 2017 later. And this is also the first country to have come up with this kind of seed system development strategy. So it was an exciting study, actually.
Yeah, so for the readers, they will find that these key parameters, suitability, availability, access, quality, and resilience, very thoroughly reviewed and applied, actually, in the article. But what are the main takeaways of this study?
Yeah, that's interesting. When you do research, it of course it's a small contribution that everybody makes, and then at the end of the day, you contribute to knowledge. But the specific contribution of this research is probably the fact that there was widespread seed insecurity in two steady districts. This is interesting because in one of the districts, farmers are, these are all smallholder farmers, they are commercially oriented, wheat producers. This district had high density of formal seed system actors since the 1950s, really. And in other districts, which we selected, smallholder farmers are subsistence oriented. And the formal seed system actors are nearly absent. So it was to compare those. Imagine the formal seed system had almost 70 years of government support. Donors, government, other actors have been supporting this in this commercial district. The other one is subsistence. And because of poor infrastructure and poor institutional network there, there isn't any activity, really. Sometimes they get seed from far places. It is distributed through government. But breeding, selection, seed production, marketing, it's not there. So the fact that we found seed insecurity in both studies kind of make governments, development practitioners and researchers to start asking, questioning. That's the first thing I would say was very interesting.
Which districts were these?
These are in Central Highlands of Ethiopia. One is southeast of the capital, Addis Ababa. I don't remember exactly. It is in the article how far it is from the capital. The other one is west of Addis Ababa. The commercial district is called Hetosa, and the subsistence district is called Gindabaret. And then I was expecting actually farmers in the commercial district would be better in terms of seed security. But the problem was in both districts. And the study also pointed out specific seed insecurity problems linked to the agroecological, socioeconomic, and the political factors in both districts, which I think is very useful for policymakers and also practitioners. For example, interestingly, we found a differentiated access to preferred seed and information according to wealth and the status of farmers. And then we saw that model farmers have a preferential access to certified seeds compared to other farmers, for example, in this commercial district. This is a wheat growing area, bread wheat growing area. The district uses farmers' political loyalty to the ruling party to select model farmers, which is really political and very interesting to observe. So the other takeaway maybe is our research approach, which sets an example for future seed system and seed security research. Most seed security research are in disaster areas. We did in non-disaster seed security study. It was done in districts that had normal growing conditions, you know, unlike in areas where there is post-conflict or post-drought or flood. This was done under a normal agricultural development condition. It's also linked seed security and seed system, which many studies didn't before. It again then related this to the national policy of for seed system development. So I would say the fact that it linked all of this and the fact that we were able to show how one can do all of this at the same time was useful. And I see this as a good contribution to the literature, actually.
Yeah, as I was reading the article, I had the feeling that the research design was under the assumption or was conceived under the hypothesis that you would find differences between the two districts. And it was interesting to see how, as the text evolves, like you find the fact that one district is like more developed, more formalized in a way, and the other one is like more in the informal sphere.
Exactly.
The differences do not correspond with that distinction.
It was not. And imagine how much investment has been done for basically the same situation after 70 years. So not exactly the same, but not a huge difference.
Yeah,
The
other thing that was evident, or is evident as you read the article, is that seed security as a concept and as a phenomenon is not very easy to see. Like after reading the text, like I got an idea. Of course, I'm not an expert in these topics, but. But after reading the text, one can get like an idea of why seed security is important. So I was my question is why is seed security so difficult to see, given that it's so important?
Interesting. Now I'm happy that Norway is promoting this at the UN Food Summit, of course. But as you rightly said. Seed security has not received deserved attention, as you implied in your question. Yeah, I think the fragmentation of seed system research and development work has contributed to this. Partly, we have had heated debates within the academia and development circle, agriculture development circle, around access to plant genetic resource for food and agriculture. And benefit sharing arising from the commercialization of product from these accessed materials. So there was tension between the global south and the global north, as many would refer the global south as gene-rich and the global north as gene-poor countries. So there was tension. This has existed for some time now and attracted some focus. So there are a lot of literature on governance of plant genetic resources for food and agriculture. I myself published one paper for my PhD as part of my PhD on governance of PGA, plant genetic resources for food and agriculture. There is a lot of literature there. And also, we have research mainly focusing on the roles of formal and farmers' seed systems, which sometimes advocate for one approach over the other, instead of seeking, you know, showing how integration of both can be achieved. Some supported, of course, integrated seed system development. That is not, it is not much research. Few researchers, especially from the Netherlands, have done this, and a very nice work they did. But it's not many. We have had seed security studies, but they primarily focus on disaster situations and the humanitarian aid, as I said before. So although the concept of seed security was there since 1970s, actually, I have discussed this in my thesis chapter, introduction chapter, in detail. Including when FAO promoted the concept of seed security in the late 1990s. So it is not integrated into seed system research, despite the concept was out there for the past 50 years. And also in genetic resource governance literature. So it's kind of forgotten, but I'm happy that it is now coming up. So I think that fragmentation of research and development work has somehow didn't use the seed security framework as a unifying approach in seed system development generally. From governance of genetic resource, seed system development, to ensuring seed security for farmers.
Interesting. One important categorical distinction in the article, or to approach this, the phenomenon of this strategy in Ethiopia for seed security, is the distinction between formal versus informal seed system. That is. very important distinction, and I, as I read the text, I understood in a way, or I got an idea of what would a formal system and an informal system be, but I want to ask you more directly, what is it that distinguishes a formal from an informal seed system?
I'm not sure if I would like to separate them, because I would like to see what farmers do, you know. Farmers draw on both formal and informal seed system. They use both. But, you know, policy advocates often distinguish the two. And there is this dichotomy. As you rightly said, there is clear dichotomy. But I also like to call the informal differently. I would like to call farmer seed system and formal seed system, if we need to distinguish. I myself forget to be consistent all the time, but the term informal is controversial because the use of the term kind of discredits 10,000 years of farmers' role in crop evolution. You call informal, you know, and instead of then farmer seed system, you call informal seed system. but it has been there for 10,000 years since we started agriculture. So, but coming to the definition of it or the description of it, it is a production of, mainly it's based on production of seed by farmers themselves and exchanging seeds among themselves. So they make seed selection in their particular location and cropping system and within farmers' cultural perceptions, let's say concerning color, taste of a variety or a product. All these are important in farmers' seed system. So I can generally say that farmers' seed system involve farmers' seed selection, multiplication, storage, use, and distribution through social networks and local markets. And also, as I said, they draw on both formal and informal, formal and their own farmer seed system. Because of that, the farmer seed system include both traditional and improved varieties. The improved varieties are those varieties that has been supplied by the formal seed system, but these improved varieties are not recommended after some time by governments because of loss of their quality or genetic traits, for example, yield or disease resistance and so on. But farmers like and keep some of this, so they become integrated into their own system. When it comes to formal seed system, it is origin is seed market and scientific advancement. For example, some crops take up to two seasons to produce seeds, and farmers don't afford to use their land for two seasons just to produce seed, right? So when actors came with, you know, specializes and produce seed and sell it to them, then it is no more important for them to produce seed and they can buy. It's a reasonable one. And again, you see scientific advancement. This has, in a way, led to division of task, you know, specialization within the seed value chain. So institutionally, you would say a formal seed system involves public and private sector institutions. It's a leaner series of activities along seed value chain, which means it includes germplasm conservation in gene bank, breeding and plant variety development, and variety release and registration procedures, quality seed production and marketing or distribution. So these are part of the formal seed system. Its core characteristics are varietal identity. The varieties released through the formal systems are unique. They are uniform, they are stable, they are distinct. Seed certification for quality. These are the key features of the formal seed system. When I say seed quality, it is optimal physical, physiological, and sanitary quality. That is, it is free from disease, it can germinate. Physiologically, it is robust, it can germinate, and physically, it is not damaged, it is not broken, it is, that is what I mean by seed quality.
Okay, so having that distinction well in place, at least conceptually, we know that empirically they may be mixed and even difficult to distinguish. But then we have these two seed systems, and I think on top of that idea of formal, informal, and intermediate systems, then comes this very innovative policy, the acronym being PSSDS.
Yeah, the pluralistic seed system development strategy. Yeah,
which as it's very interesting in the article to see a policy where, well, Ethiopia is the first country to design and implement it, and I was wondering. I mean, not the objective of the article, but I kept wondering, like, how did this policy or strategy emerged? Like, who conceived and designed it? What's the rationale behind it?
You are right. In this article, we just linked seed security situation that we identified on the ground to this policy, but didn't really describe the origin or the process of its development. But in my other manuscript, which is now under review, I describe this process in detail. So in Ethiopia, since mid-1980s, you know, it's internationally known that Ethiopia was affected by famine during the time in 1980s. Diverse coalition of actors have promoted alternative pathways to seed system development. Instead of just supporting the dominant formal seed system. So the food crisis, the food and agriculture crisis of the mid-1980s was a kind of critical movement for Ethiopians to reflect on what they were doing in the seed sector. So in 2006, well, this debate has been there. You know, there are institutions that were debating. It is a heated debate sometimes between Biodiversity Institute and the Ministry of Agriculture, for example, agriculture research, on what variety to promote and what technology farmers need, and so on. This has been then there. But in 2006, a Dutch-funded 1-year tailor-made training program was designed. It was implemented by ICARDA and the Wageningen University. There is this, I don't remember the name. It is a center which is doing a lot of work on seed sector development in the Global South. And this process was a multi-stakeholder process approach. So this training program brought all the key seed system actors that I said were debating for decades. And the idea of pluralistic seed system development strategy was born there, according to my informant. Later, the Dutch supported a program called Integrated Seed Sector Development in Ethiopia. This program is now in Myanmar. It is in Uganda. It is in many African countries, this program now. It's scaled out to many African countries through the support of this institution at Wageningen University and the Dutch government, the ICCD also, the Integrated Seed Sector Development Program, played a catalytic role in bringing seed system actors together through practical projects. You know, so these actors continued debating policy and governance issues related to different seed system development alternatives at different level, national, local, regional. And the debate continued during the first phase of this program, ICCD, between 2009 and 11. And this process took a policy development form, and it was taken up by Ethiopian Agriculture Transformation Agency, an agency that the late Prime Minister Meles Zenawi established with the support of Bill and Melinda Gates in 2010. Then the Pluralistic Seed System Development Strategy was released in 2013. Initially, this agency, Agriculture Transformation Agency, wanted to only support formal seed system. And it was in the privatization direction in a way. And there was donor pressure behind it. Mm-hmm. As I said, Rockefeller Foundation, Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, they were supporting. But, you know, in Ethiopia, the technocrats are tough. So they didn't allow just supporting the same thing, you know, the business as usual. They said, large volume of seed and the majority of varieties of crops that farmers use come from the informal system. So we need to strengthen different thing now. What is the difference if we just continue the previous formal seed system development? So after debating like for years, then in 2013, this policy was realized. Now in 2017, the government approved it. It is too early to say much about the this policy implementation, but there are, for example, this intermediate seed sector that was born, which includes farmers' seed producer cooperatives, and which uses FAO's quality declared seed certification scheme, which is not as strict as seed certification in the formal seed system, but still taking care of the basic seed quality features, you know, cutting the bureaucracies, cutting the procedures, and trying to ease access to seed for farmers. And the volume of seed produced by around, you know, close to 300 cooperatives in Ethiopia has now increased. So there are some signs, but implementation still have challenges, which I can talk about later.
Also in the article, I remember reading some very, powerful citations of in the interviews and focus groups. One of them, or maybe more than one, they were talking about like the loss of traditional varieties in previous decades, and depicting how in a way the formal system had not been like a solution for the problems they were intended to solve, but how also the traditional system was in a way in crisis towards the end of the 20th century. Which would be the main causes for the loss of the traditional varieties in the sites of study?
Well, that one is, farmers listed a number of causes for this. They say they switched to high yielding improved varieties, especially in the commercial district, where bread wheat replaced durum wheat, which Ethiopia is known as the center of its diversity. It replaced durum wheat and barley and other crops because the yield was very attractive to farmers. They mentioned that. That is probably the major cause. But then they also said they abandoned low-yielding varieties, not only abandoned low-yielding varieties, but also varieties that were not resistant to disease. Wheat is... globally, wheat production is facing a huge challenge because of this disease called wheat rust. Since 2010, this disease expanded globally and caused a lot of wheat production loss. Mm-hmm. So the traditional varieties were, most of them, they said, were susceptible to this disease. And the traditional varieties also grow taller, you know. The plant height is very tall. And then when there is heavy rain and wind, there is a problem of lodging. So they also said they abandoned. The soil is poor. They had to apply chemical fertilizer. And then when they apply chemical fertilizer, the traditional varieties grow taller. And then lodging was a major problem. They abandoned. They also mentioned like they like some of the traditional varieties still. And I have even seen community seed banks established in this commercial district to promote lost traditional varieties among farmers. But they say generally some of the varieties they want, are no more there. Seed, so availability is also another challenge. They mentioned several reasons for the loss of traditional varieties.
I brought that question because I think it's interesting to see like the complexity of the context in which PSSDS emerges. A context, I got impression that it's like a situation where no alternative can bring all the solutions. You cannot rely only on the traditional system, not only on the more formal system. You have like this difficult distinction where everything is mixed, and then comes this policy, which sounds it sounds like a good idea, at least for the reader at distance. But I was also wondering what is the Ethiopian state rationale in pursuing the strategy? Because one thing that came to my mind is not specified like that in the article. Again, it's not the objective of the article. Mm. But I kept wondering, like, is the Ethiopian state trying to, in a way, like incorporate the informal into a more formalized or like in their indirect form of control? Or is it trying to like give way to in an innovative way to new market forces to, in a way, control the informal sector, which is beyond the control of the state, so far as I understand? Or maybe it is truly something different that tries to recognize the coexistence of these multiple approaches to see the production and distribution.
Exactly. I agree to the last point, the coexistence you mentioned. I describe this also in the manuscript, which I mentioned before, which is now under review. I go back to 1907, when the Ministry of Agriculture established in Ethiopia, and then go directly to the 1950s agriculture modernization, the beginning of agriculture modernization in the country, where the United States came up with this Point 4 program, President Truman's modernization project in the Global South. I won't go in detail to that, but I describe there. So coming back to the Ethiopian state pursuing with the pluralistic seed system strategy, the strategy proposes support for three seed systems operating in the country. So the technocrats and policy experts, after many years of discussion, which I talked about before, through a platform created by the Dutch support, they identified the farmer seed system, the formal seed system, and also an emerging intermediate seed system, which include farmers' cooperative engaging in commercial seed production. So they wanted to promote complementarity between seed value chain by recognizing all of this system. When I say seed value chain, it is from the genetic resource that you maintain in gene bank and the farmer's field to the variety that farmers select, as well as the variety that scientists develop. And then the seed farmers produce and the seed companies produce, as well as the role of NGOs in facilitating all of this, and so on. They want to see complementarity between this. That's the objective. So it assumes the public, private, community, NGO stakeholders taking particular role in the seed value chains. And it wants to integrate activities along the seed value chain. So it's a pragmatic approach, actually. Instead of the farmer seed system, formal seed system dichotomy, they wanted to approach the seed system development pragmatically. Just looking at what farmers do and the role of the different seed sector, seed system actors in this. So it departs very much from the linear model of formal seed system development, which Ethiopia supported since 1950s, which many countries still in the global south use as a blueprint for their seed sector development. The main emphasis of the government is to make sure that everyone contributes. It's recognized, and then actually in that policy strategy, in that policy document, they identify also stakeholders in the country and their roles and propose what they can do. So they don't exclude. They in the last few years, they also try to kind of harmonize the different policy and regulatory framework. it is problematic, like when it comes to implementation of it, mainly because of politics, which maybe I can talk about later.
Yeah, of course, it would be interesting to go in that direction. But first, I would like to ask you then, I mean, after doing this research in this particular article, because I understand that within your PhD project, you are looking also at the history of this set of policies. In this particular article, you go more in detail, like in the actual results or like impacts that so far PSSDS has had. And I think now you are possibly in a position to say something about if this policy has been somewhat a successful attempt of decentralization. What do you think?
That is an interesting question. Decentralization, yes and no. If you see the recognition of role of all seed system actors instead of the formal seed system actor only, the answer is yes. In a way, there is some changes compared to what the government has done since 1950s. But my analysis of the pluralistic seed system development policy implementation in the manuscript I mentioned, which is under review, shows no sign of decentralization, actually. Of course, it is early to conclude because this is a policy that was first released to try in 2013 and then approved in 2017 while I was still in the field. Yeah. Although I had followed up my informants until recently on these issues. And monitored the policy development and the implementation as well. So Ethiopia is a federal state, federal in quotation. It's a federal state, which means you have regional state, autonomous regional state, theoretically. In a country like this, you want to see diversity of policies, initiatives, and so on. But it is not. In Ethiopia, it is one and one. So the federal government still dictates everything. So it is a top-down kind of agriculture and rural development. So because of this, the formal seed system is still dominant. According to my analysis in this last manuscript, it's still dominant, even if the government, after a new Ethiopian constitution in 1995, which established the federal states, after they kind of decentralized agriculture research and rural development, they created a number of regional agriculture research institutions. The government created regional seed enterprises, and agricultural extension was also decentralized into regions. But all of them implement what the federal government says. They don't challenge. They don't. Basically, they want to. They have to respect the federal laws, but different paths can be followed based on the context of the region, right? But it is so uniform that still the formal seed system is dominant. For example, the government don't want to see the private sector distributing hybrid maize in Ethiopia. They're still resisting. According to my informant, this is because the ruling party don't want to lose its constituencies, which are farmers. So input distribution is a political tool that the government uses for the vote. So you provide input to farmers and campaign. So still they want to have control of that. So it is still public, and the formal sector still dominates. And also, so my analysis kind of show that it is not more than institutional expansion. Rather, it strengthens the hierarchical system of local administration to extend the federal government's power to region. So it is yes and no. Mm. Yeah.
Mm. So if I understand correctly, PSSDS is anchored within the central power in Ethiopia.
Exactly. So it's the pluralistic seed system strategy is a national policy. Huh?
Yeah.
It's a national policy, and regions need to translate that into practice. But when they practice, for example, region one may want private companies to do vegetable seed, from breeding to seed marketing, for example. Region two might say no to that. So this can go for hybrid maize. But what you see is resistance all over. Mm-hmm. So the ruling party still controls. It has sales that kind of make sure that government control is there on some of the key agriculture and rural development.
I can relate with
So this will come in my next article.
Yeah, now yeah. After you've been mentioning it a couple of times, now I'm also looking forward to read that text. But you just to add another layer of complexity, you also mention in the article, you and your authors mention the not only this difficulty of working within a federal system, but also there's an ideological dispute within the federal or the central government. In particular, it caught my attention, the dispute between the Ethiopian Institute for Agricultural Research and the Ethiopian Biodiversity Institute. I wanted to ask you, how is the balance of power between these two, like in a way classical paradigm confrontation between a more conservation environmentalist approach and a more like technocratic agronomical, I guess.
Yeah.
If you could put it in those terms.
This relates to the pluralistic seed system policy development, which I discussed before. You remember I mentioned since mid 1980s after the famine in the country. Technocrats started to question the seed system development pathways, right? So the Ethiopian Biodiversity Institute is one of the key actors in the seed sector. So they house Africa's biggest national gene bank, and there are also vocal and influential personalities in the institute, who participated in negotiation on behalf of the African bloc, for example, in Convention on Biological Diversity negotiations, International Treaty on Plant Genetic Resources for Food and Agriculture. In all those of process, they were very active. This is an institute established in 1976. Ethiopia is the center of origin diversity for many food crops, like Mexico for maize. Ethiopia has coffee, teff, there's guzotia, many key food crops. So it has attracted international attention as well. So these are powerful personalities, have good experience, exposure, and they want to make sure that diversity doesn't disappear, farmer seed system is supported, and farmers are central when it comes to seed system development. Mm-hmm. But the Ethiopian Agriculture Institute work based on policies and plans designed at the Ministry of Agriculture, which is for modernizing smallholder farmers in Ethiopia. So the dispute is, for example, on the use of traditional versus improved varieties, on conservation in gene bank to instead of supporting farmer seed system. These are the dispute. No, also the institute, the Biodiversity Institute, has gene bank and believe that conservation in gene bank is very important. They want to also go out and make sure that conservation happens in farmers' field as well. So these are the kind of debates that the platform organized by ICARDA and the Dutch support brought actors together. And this is the kind of debates which resulted in the pluralistic seed system strategy itself. Mm-hmm. But then when you look at the implementation, it is not only the politics and the ruling party that plays a role in making sure that they have control over input, agriculture input, but also the institutions themselves, even if they discussed and debated and identified who will do what within the framework of the pluralistic seed system policy, then they went back and started doing the same thing they were doing.
On their own, their own agendas.
Yeah, their own thing. So like the agriculture extension do not help farmers when it comes to traditional varieties where it is necessary, you know? And then you also see that this conflict in the areas where I did the field work, farmers told me, this NEOGO says you have to grow traditional varieties, not improved. And then the government extension come to me and say, you have to abandon these traditional varieties. You know, the conflicting message comes to farmers. And then the institutions themselves didn't change in terms of their practice, even if they debated and had this wonderful policy on paper.
Mm. Interesting. Yeah, well, I encourage our audience, our listeners, to take a look at this article. It's open access, I believe.
It is open access.
So
yeah.
if you just do a search on Google and try to look for pluralistic seed system development, a path to seed security, then you can take a look and get engaged in this very interesting discussion.
Maybe there is a possibility for making links to as well.
Sure, yeah. we'll put both the link to the article in the podcast description, as well as a link to the press release you were talking about in the introduction, with Erna Solberg's intervention in the UN General Assembly in New York.
Yeah.
So. Yeah, okay.
Thanks.
Thanks for the overview, Teshome. Thanks for your time. I think this is a very exciting topic. We could be having this conversation for a long, long time.
Sure. I can talk about it for days. So.
And maybe we can invite you again once the third manuscript of your thesis is published.
Yeah.
Because this policy, given that it's the first one of its kind to be implemented by a nation state, it's super interesting to take a look at. Okay, so thank you everyone for listening. Thanks to Shome for coming.
And thank you. No, thank you.
See you next time on another episode of the Political Ecology Forum podcast.